This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The whole world loves football. Not the American kind, but what we call soccer. In this country, we've been slow to warm to this sport that the rest of the world has embraced, but that's beginning to change, what with the hordes of children being raised on soccer. Then there was last summer's World Cup, in which the United States actually fielded a viable team. That certainly raised interest. Charlotte is home to two very successful college teams, the UNC Charlotte 49ers and the Davidson Wildcats, both ranked among the top 25 college teams in the country. And that has excited a number of sports fans. And next year, Charlotte will debut a new professional soccer team, the Charlotte Independents, which will play in the United Soccer League. That sets the stage for our conversation this hour about all things football or soccer with the author of Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet, Shane Stay, who joins us by phone from Chicago. Good morning and thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you very much. Good to be here.
And with us in our Spirit Square studios, the head coach of men's soccer at Davidson College, Matt Spear. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thomas Finley, is the executive director of the Carolina Rapids Soccer Club. That's an organization promoting and supporting the playing of soccer by people of all ages. Thank you for joining us.
Morning.
And Wade Leapart is the chief revenue officer. Boy, you've got your work cut out for you. For the Charlotte Independents, that's our new professional team. Mr. Leapart is also vice president and general manager of the Charlotte Hounds, which happens to be our lacrosse team. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Let me start with Shane, because you wrote this book, Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet, which is a lot about American soccer and techniques and technicalities in American soccer. But what has been the rest of the world's fascination with this game, and why have we been so late to the game?
Well, the rest of the world has had a good 100-year start with most of their outdoor leagues. And I think we've been late to the game because we're so enraptured with the big three, which would be baseball, basketball, and football, and we've taken a long time to get into soccer.
Is it because 100 years ago the pond, the Atlantic Ocean, was an ocean? It was arduous to get across. So, and we didn't have television, and we didn't have radio, and so things developed in isolation, in silos. So we had baseball, and gradually we had basketball, and then we had football. They had soccer, and it wasn't until television and satellites that the things began to cross the ocean. Would that be fairly accurate? Because they don't have a baseball over in England. They have cricket, but they don't have baseball.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And baseball is so similar to cricket, but we tweaked it a little bit, sort of, you know, as a snide move against the English, you know, and now it's our game. And I think we've always, you know, obviously wanted our independence from England. And when it came to soccer, I think we're such an independent country. We like to do things on our own. We have our own sports, the big three, and you know, soccer was kind of something that a lot of people just looked at as a foreign sport, and that's what they do. This is what we do. You know, we do baseball, basketball, and football.
Yeah, aside from writing your book, Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet, you've played, I'm told, soccer professionally. You're a writer and you're a comedian, but you're serious about this topic. You've played professionally in Brazil, Spain.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't know how serious I would be there.
You've played professionally in Brazil, Spain, Holland. You say that a lot of why this sport is slow out of the starting gate has nothing to do with the athleticism of those who play it or their dedication. It has to do with the players and the coaches being fed the wrong ideas. Give me some examples.
Dribbling's a big thing. Someone just sent me a tape of a youth game that, it was a good game, he said, and it was, the players are really good, but you could hear the parents in the sideline, and it's the same old story. They're yelling at the kids, don't dribble, you know, stop dribbling. And that's a wrong message to send to kids and adults when they play as well. You know, I think dribbling is something that a lot of the world has noticed we're not good at, and to quote a lot of foreigners that I've spoken with, to them American soccer is very dull, boring, uninspired, without style, without skill, and boring, you know, and for the really large part, they're right.
Well, let me bring the two guests in here in our studio that are both coaches and run organizations, soccer organizations, Matthew Spear and Thomas Finley. Would you agree with those two criticisms of American soccer? You're each pointing at each other. I'll give it to Thomas because you're from Scotland.
originally. I'm from Scotland, but I think I'm very proud to say I'm an American coach being taught by US Soccer and my mentors and things like that. I do agree with Shane. I think one of the things, even within our curriculum at our club, our first step towards providing a toolbox for the players is dribbling. And with dribbling, you learn ankle control.
I have to stop you right here and ask you if your players understand you.
Yes. I walk around with a translator.
Now, say that again.
Sorry. Basically, I think from our mindset is, so I'm from Scotland, supposed to be good at golf. I'm not good at golf. Uh-huh. I don't like it. I'm not good at it, so I don't play it. And I think the more skills you provide a player, if they become good at something, they want to stay in it, they want to enjoy it and participate more. So dribbling, you provide them, they learn ankle control, which is inside, outside of the foot, both feet. With that becomes passing when you lock the ankle. Then when you move on from passing, you can start shooting the ball. So it's providing them a toolbox. So like Shane's saying, dribbling is a fundamental skill that all players should have.
Matt?
Yeah, when I get my players at the college level at age 18, we hope that the great people like Thomas are emphasizing from ages 5, 6, and on confidence and comfort with the soccer ball. And I think Shane would emphasize that as well. Players love soccer because they're the quarterback, they're the point guard, they make the decisions on the ball. And even though parents and coaches may be screaming too much on the sideline, it's their momentum, and that's why the sport is so popular amongst young people in this country. Boys and girls can play, and they love dribbling and shooting, and passing is the next part of the process. But it's a team sport, but also celebrates individual creativity.
Mm-hmm. One of the criticisms I read, and I know nothing about soccer, but one of the criticisms I read yesterday about soccer is that it doesn't have a lot of strategy to it, and that's why Americans are cold to it. Or maybe it's just that they don't understand the game. Does it have strategy?
Absolutely. I think that there's formations, there's systems of play, there's counterattacking, there's so much that goes into it.
And who makes those decisions? Is it all done on the fly? Because nothing ever stops. There's no huddles.
No, there's no timeouts.
That's right.
And I think, quite honestly, one of my fears as a soccer coach is overcoaching. We can't figure it out for the players. And again, that's why the players love the sport, because they're making decisions on the field. Once the game happens, we can stand back and encourage our players and let them make decisions without worry of making the wrong one. The game is constantly flowing. There's no stoppages. I mean, you watch a game on TV, it's 45 straight minutes without commercials. And for some Americans, that's painful. But for American soccer fans that really are aficionados, they appreciate that because there's that process that's going on.
I was sitting in a restaurant the other night, and they had a soccer match up on the screen, and I was watching the thing go on and on and on and and on. It never stopped. It seemed to be full of activity. It didn't seem slow to me. And I've watched soccer before, but it didn't seem slow. But I'm going to get the last criticism out of the way here. Larry Thornbury, writing in The American Spectator, describes soccer and why Americans don't like it this way. He says, soccer is slow, low scoring, low on action, and as we learned during this year's Cup, features an alarming undercurrent of cannibalism. I'm not sure what that means. Besides, the matches last a day and a half, a long time to attend any game that finishes 0-0. Anybody want to comment on that?
We accept criticism. I mean, there's always going to be naysayers. I mean, we'll go on stats in a little bit, but soccer is the most popular sport in the world. It's, to me, the biggest global phenomenon. And there's beauty in a 0-0 game, and some people won't get it. We don't have to talk them into loving soccer. Mm-hmm. Goals don't equal excitement or success. There's a lot more to the match than just a goal.
Shane, let me hear you chime in on that.
What it comes down to go on his point there is sometimes you can lose a game on the scoreboard, but you win the game in possession and you outplay the other team. And a great example of that was Spain versus Switzerland in the first game of Spain's World Cup in 2010. They eventually won the whole thing, but they got beat by Switzerland. They completely outplayed them. They lost 1-0, but it was clear to everybody that they won the game. And I think long-term success comes from continuous moments that Spain generates, that Germany generates on the field with possession. And once American soccer players are fans and players alike come to understand and appreciate possession more, then we'll get more in tune with long-term winning, and that's one thing that's been lacking a lot with American soccer.
I'd like to hear all of you comment on this, because we've just raised two or three generations of young people, kids, on soccer. They start playing it at, what, 5 years old, 4 years old, and they go right on through high school and into college and then into the pros, if they're lucky, some of them. So I'd like to get everybody's opinion on this. What impact is that having today on soccer? Is this causing this to be the moment in time where soccer begins to emerge onto the main stage? And you have a lot at stake at this, Wade, because you're with the Charlotte Independents, a professional league, a professional team that starts next year. Is this the time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look at something like lacrosse, which is the fastest growing sport, you know, in terms of youth participation. But soccer, it's right up there. The numbers are staggering, and I think it's because the parents think it's safe. A lot of things going on in football and concussions and things like that. But yeah, I was talking to these guys before. I think we're one World Cup cycle away from this just really exploding.
Mm-hmm.
Having the kids pick it up, but you know, the generation moving up is key.
Thomas.
I think eventually history will tell us if this is the moment in time where it's a pivotal point in the development of soccer. But I think there's a long history of soccer in America, going back 100 years, as we were talking about right before. Yeah. But I think it's really just made this mainstream platform. Mm-hmm. I think each World Cup turns around more popular. It's more popular, the more people are following it. The social media, if you look at the average age of people following it now, it's incredible. So I think this is just another step in the right direction. And again, at the end of the day, history will tell us if this is the moment in time where it accelerates into the mainstream.
How long have you been coach at Davidson?
14 years.
So in those 14 years, you've seen a lot of young people come through your program, and they're coming through from having played in their younger years. Are you seeing a progression of young people getting better, already better at it than when they were 14 years ago when they got to you?
Yes, and part of that is just because the media exposure of the game and players and fans understanding the nuances of this global sport. They're watching Lionel Messi, the great Argentinian player, and do magical things on the ball that I couldn't as a kid because it just wasn't on TV and mm-hmm. there wasn't the internet, things like that. So I think American youth today, they love their local club, you know, like the Carolina Rapids, but they also love their Major League Soccer team. But probably sometimes even more than that, they might watch Chelsea or Arsenal or Bayern Munich, because the game is so globally recognized.
Not just that. I mean, the guys are playing FIFA 15. You know, I've got a 9-year-old he's a budding GM. It's amazing how, you know, those games are. They watch the play. They store it. Hey, Dad, come watch this shot I took earlier. And he's out in the yard trying to mock it. So, big technology advancement there.
So, Shane, does that mean your book, Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet, has a short shelf life?
Well, hire me as the coach and you'll figure that out. I like what was said just a second ago about the media catching on to it, because when I was growing up and when these guys were growing up as well, back in the dark ages of soccer, the mainstream media networks would not show soccer, for one. If they did, it was very rare, and they would clump soccer into side topics such as ping pong, Peruvian bocce ball, and soccer. You know, it was like the highlights were very scant, and you know, the game was disrespected a lot, and to some extent that's still true. But to the extent that when America wins the World Cup, I mean, that would be a huge turning point, as soccer right now is probably the fourth most popular sport, taking over tennis and hockey, and things just changing so drastically. Like when I was growing up, my parents were guilty of this. And
Let me stop you. I'll let you finish on the other side, but we're going to take a break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Ferguson Bath Kitchen and Lighting Gallery, with the latest in kitchen and bath, including Electrolux washers and dryers featuring 29-minute wash and dry cycles. Locations at Ferguson.com. And the Southern Christmas Show, featuring crafts, gifts, music, food, and over 400 holiday merchants, now through Sunday at the Park Expo and Conference Center. Details at SouthernChristmasShow.com. Well, all of us were blindsided recently by the sudden resignation of CMS Superintendent Dr. Heath Morrison, and then we were puzzled by the various reasons we were given for his departure, and some were angered by the lack of transparency by the school board about all of this. They seemed reluctant to share anything about this resignation of what was purported to be a superstar in education. Well, we're going to talk to some key players about what happened and how all of this was handled Monday at 9:00.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, President Obama announces executive action on immigration, the Senate votes against the Keystone XL pipeline, and U.S. auto safety regulators demand an expanded airbag recall.
Join the News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking soccer in advance of the new Charlotte Independence taking the field in 2015. Wade Leapart is with us. He's the chief revenue officer for that new professional soccer team in Charlotte. Matt Spear, I keep wanting to call you Matthew. Is the
it's
head
okay.
coach.
Mom would love that.
Okay. Head, only when you're in trouble. He's the head men's coach of soccer at Davidson College. Thomas Finley is executive director of the Carolina Rapids Soccer Club, and Shane Stay is the author of Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet. He joins us by phone from Chicago. I had to stop you in the middle of a thought, Shane. Go ahead.
Thank you. I think I was saying that soccer's grown so much, and when I was growing up, my parents were guilty of this just as much as other parents. You know, they'd see a soccer ball, and it was so foreign to them, and it was like a trident laying in the front yard. They don't know what to do with it, you know, and it's just a matter of time for so many parents of the new generations to have soccer skills from playing the game to pass that on to their kids, and it's that confidence of passing on those skills to the next generation that'll lead to success, because upcoming players need to see examples of the game, and we've lacked that so much. But what we have given good examples of in the past is football, baseball, and basketball, and that's why we're so good at those sports.
Well, Matt Spear, the coach at Davidson, bought and read your book last night. That's how you can tell he teaches at Davidson, because he read the entire book last night. And although your title sounds pessimistic, Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet, you pointed out, Matthew, that the last sentence in the book says,
"It's just a matter of time."
And you're kind of saying with the word yet, there's some hope there. Is that the idea here?
Absolutely. You know, all of us that are soccer aficionados and purists and coaches and fans and businessmen, we're aggressive. We're bullish about soccer, and we don't need to be defensive about it. And we also don't need to try to replace the big three, as Shane called them. Mm-hmm. We have enormous momentum. There's an appetite for athletics in this country and the world. That's only going to grow. One of the stats I love for Major League Soccer, which I think is doing a wonderful job in this country, because we didn't have a Major League Soccer, you know, league when I grew up. The average fans at per game this year was 19,000.
Yeah,
that's more than the NBA and NHL attendances. Now, we're not necessarily saying we're better than the NBA or NHL, but we're there.
Are there fewer matches than there are NBA games?
There yes. are.
Could that be part of the reason?
It could be.
On average, though.
Yeah, but still, on average, yeah. on average, not the total attendance. And obviously, the World Cup numbers are out the roof. I mean, the World Cup, some 2 billion people follow the World Cup. That's one out of three humans, you know. And the NBA, those are great. It's not the World Championship. It's the NBA. It's yeah. great. But the World Cup is truly, as I said before, it's the example. It's the pinnacle. It's the most amazing and global phenomenon there is. In human culture.
And Thomas, you work with people of all ages who are playing soccer. What's driving young people? Is it their exposure on television to it now? Is it their parents saying, I don't want you playing American football because there's too many chances for injuries and concussions, et cetera? What's making this happen? Why are young kids coming into your leagues as opposed to Little League or Pee Wee football or something else?
I think it's probably a little part of everything. I think when you look at it, it's definitely part of society now. When people talk, you know, the four-year-olds are like, well, what are you going to do this fall? It's either soccer or it's baseball or basketball, but we're definitely in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think then when you look at the sport itself, what you can do, the parents can play with the kids out in the backyard, and they also can get involved in coaching as a volunteer coach. But it's just definitely part of everything. The soccer experience, teammates, the social aspect of it, the fun, the enjoyment, the self-esteem, the confidence it comes from participating and seeing yourself successful and learning how to dribble and score goals and just the overall mainstream popularity on TV. Kids know what soccer is. And definitely there's a lot of, you know, people out there that critique the game of soccer, and just because you critique it doesn't mean you're correct, though. So when you look at things, you know, it's either the glass is half full or the glass is half empty, and in our world it's definitely half full and we're moving in a positive direction.
Can I guess, because we've had several generations of young people come through these junior soccer leagues, essentially, yeah, that now we do have parents who played as kids, so they can be coaches. Was there a time when parents just didn't get it? They had no idea what was going on out there.
Yeah, my dad certainly didn't play any soccer growing up in the middle of Kansas, and he was forced to be, you know, a soccer dad and coach myself and some siblings. And but he learned to appreciate it and love it, and I think he appreciated that that global aspect of it. And some Americans don't like it that it's so global. I think Shane said that earlier. There's a part of Americana that resists soccer because they see it as a foreign sport. People socialist almost.
We have the World Series, but it has nothing to do with the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Shane, how did you get started? Because I don't know how old you are, but I would imagine that when you started playing soccer, it wasn't the thing to do.
It was not, but it was growing so much, and I came from a college town in I'm from the South, by the way, so okay. I'm glad to be on a North Carolina show. Southern Illinois, by the way.
You are a comedian.
It's we're very South down there, trust me. We're two steps from the bayou, and we had a university town there, and there was a lot of foreigners at the town, so down in SIU, Southern Illinois University, and so there was a lot of sort of excitement about the game, and there were people from all over the world there. It's one of those colleges that draws in not just American kids but international students a lot, so there was all these international games going on. They had their leagues and everything, and I just got drawn into it from that, and like the other guest said, my dad had no idea about soccer. My mom had no idea about soccer, but they liked it. You know, they saw the excitement in it, and despite being complete bellwethers about the sport, they really saw what it was all about. And I think a lot of American fans, you know, if you can relate soccer to basketball, you know, that's where the passion of soccer comes in a lot. And basketball is such a quick scoring game, though. And the guest touched on it earlier with soccer. You know, the possession can go on forever sometimes, and some people don't appreciate it quite so much. But if you look at possession as something that you can appreciate and compare it with basketball a little bit, there's a great skill in possessing the ball, that's so key in the game, and that brings a lot of excitement when you get good at the possessing. Then more goals and more action will come.
What about that comparison to basketball? When you look at it, it looks not unlike basketball.
It's very similar. I think when you look at the technical part of it, it's, you know, we say things like it's the principles of attack or principles of defense, and you know, the old triangle formation, Phil Jackson. If you look at it within soccer, we're always teaching the person with the ball they should have two options, one to the right, one to the left. And so it's got some fundamental sports tactics that are similar, and regardless whether even ice hockey, basketball and soccer are all very similar in the sense of the person with the ball or the puck has to make a decision. And so now you talk about options and things like that, whether it's a triangle or a diamond shape, which is the fundamental shapes in soccer that we try and teach. So definitely similar approaches in, as far as how you go towards your opponent. What do you want to do with the ball? What do you want to do when you don't have the ball? And that's where the tactics come involved.
I got a pretty long email this morning before we went on the air, about 6 o'clock this morning, as a matter of fact, from a listener who's an avid soccer fan. And Steve writes that it's very American historically, he says. The first organized game was played between Princeton and Rutgers in November of 1869. So maybe that's the first American soccer game, but I would think that soccer began earlier than that, maybe in England, Europe, Scotland.
I think the average historian might point towards England somewhere, yeah.
Okay. And then he also says that the soccer brought Charlotte its first professional national championship with the American Soccer League title in 1981, won by the Carolina Lightning.
Carolina Lightning, that's N apostrophe.
Yep. So it's our only national championship.
It's Charlotte's only championship, yep.
Okay. The Davidson Wildcats soccer team, they've been rated in the top 25 in the nation by Soccer America magazine. You're also described as a giant killer over the likes of of North Carolina, Virginia, and Duke. Aside from winning matches, what makes your team so doggone good?
Yeah, we had a great season beating Duke and Virginia this year. And what's special about our team is the brotherhood and the relationships. And soccer is such a team sport. It's not just 11 guys out there playing 1v1. It's 11 versus 11. And our strength and our season in this team is the mentality and the attitude that they can take our style of play against anybody in the country. And they really proved it this year.
You only lost two games this season.
We did. We're one of only, I think it was four teams last week that had only had two losses. And another one, and I want to point out, is UNC Charlotte are having a tremendous season and still playing in the NCAA tournament themselves. But yeah, we had a super season, and now we're following the NCAA tournament from afar. We did not get an at-large bid, but still lots of achievements this year for us.
Shane writes in his book about all the things that American soccer teams and players and coaches are doing wrong and what they have to do right to move up around the world. I don't know what he knows about Davidson soccer. What do you know about Davidson soccer, Shane? Because they must be doing something right here.
They seem to be. And Carolina is a great bet of soccer traditionally. Anson Dorrance, the great coach out of the North Carolina women's team, said you can turn a dribbler into a passer, but you can't turn a passer into a dribbler. And that's, I heard him speak years ago, and that's one of the wisest things I've ever heard said about soccer and how we as Americans don't get it. But you know, I think you have to criticize our game to get better, because we're clearly you know on the cusp of getting into deep levels of the World Cup finals instead of getting into the second round and having that be a miracle, and everybody being shocked by it literally. We'll very soon, I think, get to the finals, and with ideas like that Coach Dorrance said in the past, and there's a lot of smart soccer people in the country. Don't get me wrong. There seems to be some misperception that my book and stance is we shouldn't support the American team. I think quite to the contrary, but we should support them. And there's so many brilliant soccer minds out there, including Anson Dorrance, Jerry Yeagley in the past, and so many other coaches that really get it. They know what's going on. They understand the game, and they and like these guests, they seem to be exuding. We need to get more people on the right page with the game, and those sort of things will happen.
When Shane said that North Carolina is kind of a hotbed for soccer, you nodded your head vigorously, Thomas. What makes it so? Why is it so?
I really agree with Shane, and just to address something Shane was saying, I think we almost have to be better coaches and better teachers of the game in America, because it's not part of our DNA yet, and I think it is. You get guys like Matt Spear, who's a volunteer recreation coach, and even coaches in our club that are former college players and pros that are teaching their own kids. So it's slowly becoming part of our DNA, but historically we've probably had to be better teachers of the game than anywhere else in the world. I think when you look at North Carolina, maybe it's the location. We've got year-round soccer, and then you look at the ACC teams that are all the way along the old Tobacco Road area, and UNC Charlotte and Davidson. And the reason I was nodding my head, I was thinking back to the early 90s. People say there's no history in this country, and you look at Davidson in the early 90s, I think it was 3 years in a row they hosted the Final Four, and there's something like 10,000 people in Davidson. And Davidson's a town of, 6,000-7,000 people, but they were attracting 10,000 people who watched college soccer 20 years ago. So North Carolina, for whatever reason, whether it's the weather, it's year-round sport, it's just excelled in all sports, but definitely soccer is definitely a hotbed. And even Davidson and Charlotte, these are two wonderful programs that have done great seasons this year.
Kids have traditionally grown up in this country, some of them at least, dreaming of careers in NBA basketball or Major League Baseball or in the NFL. Wade, do kids today playing soccer have a better shot at playing soccer professionally than they would at playing NFL football or basketball at the NBA level?
I would say yes, with all the different opportunities coming available, not only some great college programs, but the growth of USL Pro. It's great to see the affiliation with MLS.
Now, let's define that, because your new team is affiliated with USL Pro, and you're the kind of the farm team of an MLS team, the Colorado Rapids.
Right.
No association with the Carolina Rapids.
Oh, yes, actually we are.
You really? Are you?
Yeah.
Explain all this to me. This is like a super farm club system here. Explain it all to me.
Very quickly, the Colorado Rapids have created an alliance group of five clubs across the country, and we're one of them that's been selected to participate in them. Basically, it's a bigger network of coaching education and development, and it's just a wonderful relationship we have. And I think the relationship now with the Charlotte Independents, obviously we're all connected in the same family, and it's just their investment in this area and their belief in soccer in the Charlotte.
Is Davidson or the universities and colleges affiliated in some way with these two leagues? And
we are not.
You're not. But you do funnel players from Davidson have gone into the pros, right?
Absolutely, and I have players on my team that came through Thomas's club, and I have a player playing in Major League Soccer now. So the college game certainly has the ability to be this kind of segue. And quite honestly, for example, the captain of the U.S. national team at the World Cup this past summer, Clint Dempsey, played college soccer just down the road at Furman.
Yeah. Huh.
He played in the Southern Conference against Davidson. He went pro after his junior year, probably because Davidson beat him twice that year. And he said, the heck with this college game, I'm going to make some real money.
So where do professional teams like yours get their players most often? Do they come from these recreational leagues, or do they come from colleges? Where do they come from? And I know you haven't gotten your players yet, so where will you be looking?
All of the above. You look internationally, you look domestically, you look in the youth partnerships. I think the pipelines that are being formed between the MLS all the way down, to a program like Thomas's are amazing. It was part of one of the factors in why we decided to affiliate ourselves with the Colorado Rapids. There is a team in the USL Pro that just popped up in Colorado Springs, and that would seem like a natural fit, but it's just...
So the Colorado Rapids are part of the MLS, and that does not mean multiple listing service.
No.
It means Major League Soccer. And are you kind of their farm team? Is that how we would describe it?
Yeah, the USL Pro has done a fantastic job over the last few years of really just aligning themselves with MLS, and it's the hierarchy of American soccer is almost now MLS to USL
Pro.
So
will they be sending players down to you, and you'll be sending players up to them like it happens in AAA baseball? Because I think the league that you're in has been compared to AAA baseball.
Correct. Yes, there will be, I believe, upwards of five players being sent down at any point in time for development.
If I may jump in.
Sure.
That's so crucial, and I touch on it in my book, that the farm system that we're talking about here needs to be established from the MLS teams down to create this more competitive and competitive zone for soccer and for players to see the pro players and grow up with them and be around them more. And it's so crucial to have a farm team system, because the rest of the world, especially Europe, they have that, and that's where their players grow, the young players grow into the adult professional players, and they've been around a system. And we've had such a scattered organization in the past, and we haven't had that. But as these guys are saying, that's now coming out, and it's so important. It's so important to have a farm system.
That's Shane Stay, who's the author of Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet, along with Wade Liepart, who's the chief revenue officer of the new Charlotte Independents professional soccer team, which starts next year. Matthew Spear is head coach at Davidson College of their soccer program, and Thomas Finley is executive director of Carolina Rapids Soccer Club here in Charlotte. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and communities in schools sharing the light of the season with students in need through annual holiday cards. Details at cischarlotte.org. And Blumenthal Performing Arts presenting an evening with Harry Connick Jr., multi-talented musician, singer, and American Idol judge, performing live in the Belk Theater February 17th, 2015. Tickets available now at blumenthalarts.org. It's Friday, the weekly news roundup, just 20 minutes away on The Diane Rehm Show. A panel of journalists joined Diane in the first hour to talk about national news stories, including President Obama's announcement about executive action on immigration, the Senate's vote against the Keystone XL pipeline, and the U.S. auto safety regulators' demands for an expanded airbag recall. That's coming up on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation about soccer, now's the time. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
It's not a country club. It's not a yacht club. It's not a book club, but it is a prestigious club. Join the other 14,000-plus individuals here in the Charlotte area who are members of WFAE by making a contribution online at WFAE.org. Thank you for making WFAE the strongest public radio service possible.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about soccer here on the program today. I got a lot of things coming in on emails and Facebooks and Twitters feeds. Juan emails, futsal, F-U-T-S-A-L, will change soccer in the United States. Kids need to start playing in short spaces first. Everybody else does futsal in the early ages before they jump into a soccer pitch. A pitch is the field that they play on, for people who don't know. And I found out yesterday there were people who didn't know that. I knew that because I watched a British series called Footballers' Wives for about three episodes.
That's
so
entertainment.
Yes, it was. So talk about futsal.
Futsal's great. I think US soccer is now endorsing it to a great level. I think futsal, at the end of the day, is really street soccer. I think when you play in anything, whether it's concrete or whether it's an indoor gym, it's unforgiving for the touch and the skill. And so it really just improves that first touch for the player and the individual ball skill and then the creativeness that comes from it. So I think big fan of futsal, and you know, it's part of our programming at the club as well, and I think as we continue to look at development across the country, it's going to have a bigger part to play in the programming for the kids.
Okay.
Exactly, and it forces players to play in tight spaces, and that's crucial to take that to the outdoor game as well.
DJ emails, can your guests explain the epidemic of flopping? That's the attempt.
Oh, man.
That's the attempt by a player to gain an unfair advantage by feigning an injury, which allegedly happened a lot in the World
Cup. As a fan, I'm feeling that too.
Yeah, I think that just comes down to the individual characteristic of the person that's doing it, and it's not my style, and it's not my style from the culture I grew up in or the culture we endorse at our club in this country. And it's one of those things. I think it will get phased out of the game eventually, hopefully.
I grew up in Winston-Salem, not too far from here, and that's where Wake Forest University is, and that's where Thomas played his college soccer, a reason he came over to the States to play college soccer, and he was one intimidating defender. Mm. And if he'd tackle me and I would flop and fake anything, he would be taunting me for the rest of my life. I think flopping is by far, in my opinion, the biggest black eye for soccer. I think American sports fans look at it and they think soccer players are soft.
You think that doesn't happen in American football from time to time, just to stop the game?
Not to the extent. Not to the extent. You know, and I think one of the problems with flopping is that Americans want integrity, and they want decency, and they want, you know, they want their fair share of violence with athletics, but it can't be fake or can't be phony.
Well, then why aren't we talking about rugby this morning then?
Yeah, that's exactly. Those guys
too
are tough as nails. But soccer players are amazing athletes. You know, the average midfielder runs a 10K in a game, and they're changing directions and they're jumping and all that skill with the ball. And so there's tremendous amount of athleticism to really revel in. But flopping is something that's got to be fixed. And I think one thing that's going to happen at the World Cup and pro leagues when they're down, you're starting to see yellow cards giving for simulation. So they're actually calling players out on that. The next step would be to fine players. And then they would be suspended, and they would lose their wages. And as that filters down to the youth game, we've got to make sure that referees really discourage it. Don't copy that guy you watched on TV that faked that foul and won the game on a penalty kick. That's not what the sport's all about. We tell our players, play fierce but fair.
Patricia writes, I'm a psychologist in Charlotte who has been introduced to soccer by my son's love of the game. I think that Americans complain about soccer as slow and boring because as a culture, we are overly focused on outcomes and individuals rather than process and collaboration. Also, we are accustomed to ball watching. The game opened up for me once I started looking for space and triangles. This mama loves the beautiful game. That's in quotes.
Man, that's awesome. You know, we're 140 characters less society, and I tell you, as a sports fan, like, it's hard for me to watch baseball and football with all the stoppages. Like, I can really get into a lacrosse match or a soccer match, and it just, there is a lot of beauty to it. It's like, you know, it's a really exciting, semi-violent, fast-paced chess match.
Nick, there is one very simple reason why soccer will never become very popular as a spectator sport in the U.S. There are no consequences of losing in the MLS. In every other league in the world, they have tiered professional divisions, and at the end of each season, the top three teams get promoted to the higher division, and the bottom three teams drop out or drop down a tier. This has massive financial and status consequence for fans, clubs, and players, which makes it much more exciting to watch and follow. I'm a Brit now living in the U.S., and I've been involved in soccer all my life as a fan, player, coach, and worked on many soccer projects to include soccer video games, apps, and more. What do you think about what he says?
I think when you focus on the relegation thing, yeah, I mean, he's correct. I think when you add in that kind of pressure, it changes the game completely. But at the same time, no, there is consequences. If you don't make the playoffs, no, do you lose your season ticket holders for the following season? Do you lose some sponsors? Do you lose momentum within your club and organization? So I think there is consequences. It's just not that the end of all means is the relegation. You just don't get promoted into the playoffs and things like that. So it's definitely a valid point, but at the same time, no. When you look at the players, if they're having a losing record, you try to tell me there's no consequences for them. They're fighting for their own contracts. The MLS, and they're fighting for salaries and things like that.
I want to turn this around a little bit because we talked a lot about why Americans have not cottoned, as we say in the South, to football. You grew up in Scotland. You came here in 1989. When you were in Scotland, had you ever seen an American football game on television?
We had seen – it was Joe Montana – and Jerry Rice.
Okay.
I think I'd seen the Super Bowl. We stayed up late to watch the Super Bowl.
And what was your reaction to the first time you saw an American football game?
A lot of TV commercials. I enjoyed it, I think. I think I really respected the athleticism that was involved in it. And maybe just as an athlete growing up, I was intrigued by the dynamics of the sport. But for me, it was very much of an east-west direction. And soccer, for me, and my natural habitat, is a 360-degree sport that I really like.
Did it seem slow to you? Because it does stop a lot, football.
The individual plays were fast, obviously.
Right.
But the overall, the game, I'm more just of watching the flow and seeing how things develop and that. And I think, when we talked earlier about strategy, the soccer player, as Matt said, is the quarterback. Every time they've got the ball, the strategy involved, do I keep it or do I pass? And it's that simple. But American football, I'm a fan of it. I have no problems, eating some wings and having an adult Gatorade with friends watching it on the TV and that. So, I'm a big fan of it, yeah.
So the NFL is trying to make the game a worldwide game, and they've been playing games in London the last couple of years. Do the people over there get it? Will American football cross the pond, I guess, in the reverse direction? Will we be even remotely popular in Europe?
If I'm in Vegas, I'd put money on soccer being more popular here in this country than NFL being popular in Britain. I think the culture is just so defined and developed around soccer, or football, as we call it in Europe. But I think the chances of soccer developing and being successful here in America far outweigh the potential of the NFL in Europe.
Now, you grew up playing in Europe. You played with the Celtic Boys Club for 6 years, were selected for the Scotland Schoolboys International Team, and you participated in soccer tours of France and Holland and America. And Shane, you played overseas in several different for Brazil, Spain, and Holland. Talk to me about the difference between how they play in those countries where this is a real tradition, and as you say, Thomas, it's in their DNA, versus how we play here. I'd like to hear from both you and Shane. Go ahead, Thomas.
I think there's probably two ways to answer that. I think how the Americans played 20 years ago is different than how we play now. I think if you look at, and we take our teams on international trips and things at U15 and U16, American soccer players and American teams, per the style, can be very successful playing against anybody in the world. I think the gap where we struggle is between that 17, 18 to 20, 21-year-old soccer player in the team. So I think if you were to follow any youth soccer team from America competing in Europe, they're very successful as far as results or performance goes. I think that's really what it comes down to. Shane, what do you think?
Yeah, that's what I noticed quite a bit over in Europe as well. Was my team was fortunate enough to win the Holland Cup as under 16s, and we just noticed they had a large system. The players were you know high quality, and they had a large system of farm teams and second division leagues. And we were talking about relegation a second ago. You know, I think that's a great point that the emailer made, and that you know there needs to be consequences. However, though, we don't have quite the second and third division that Europe has, and if we had teams knocked back, you would have, if the Red Bulls had a bad season, they'd be playing in the NCAA probably. You know, so I don't know how well that would work. But what Europe has is just this whole system, and the players are trained in these systems, and it really brings out a higher quality of play in them.
And you do say, despite the title of your book, that American soccer can reach powerhouse levels. Why are you confident that can happen, and are you equally confident that it will happen?
We dominate every other sport, for God's sake. You know, it's like we're the best in the Olympics, we're the best in this, we're the best in that. And one of the guests mentioned Phil Jackson earlier as well, and that was, you know, to bring him up and his methods of concepts of the game and how to play the game was a great point. I think if somebody, Phil Jackson, coached in his style, he could take the players right now, or whoever coached in his style, a la Phil Jackson, and turn them around, I think. And the talent's there. I really think that it's a hop, skip, and a step away from really being that Brazil generation of 1958. And just, you know, we need the right crop of players. You need the right group, the right chemistry, the right ideas, a la Phil Jackson, to see them through. And I really think it's imminent. Maybe not right now, but it's very possible in the near future.
So let's talk a little bit about the Independents, which takes the field. When's your first game? Do you know?
Schedule's not released yet, but it looks like late March
of 2015.
That's right. Yep.
Which is right around the corner when you come right down to it. And you have no coaches, right? You have no players, correct?
Not just yet. Yeah, we've got some offers on the table. We should be able to make this coaching announcement pretty quick. We have signed a player.
You're working through Thanksgiving, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the nature of sports. We have signed a player, but keeping that in the back pocket for just now.
Okay. So you have evidently – this is very confusing to me, but there was a team called the Charlotte Eagles.
Yeah.
I didn't know we had a team called the Charlotte Eagles, but they were a professional soccer team, and you have essentially bought them, but they're moving on to another city, and you're taking their place. Explain that to me.
Yeah, let's give a shout-out to the Eagles. I've been around since 1993 at the USL Pro level, got to the championship, I believe, a couple of times. This guy's a phenomenal product. I think that the tough part in terms of, you say you don't know about it, a lot of people don't know about it. They're set up a little bit differently, not your average sports business, if you will. They're first and foremost a nonprofit sports, you know, faith-based ministry organization. Okay. A lot of the players are missionaries. Mm-hmm. You know, what Tom Engstrom and Mark Steffens did there, essentially with one hand tied behind their back, you know, only bringing in certain types of players was phenomenal. So, they did fly under the radar a little bit, you know, being a nonprofit, not a ton of marketing and a huge push behind it.
So essentially you bought their place.
He bought their USL Pro franchise rights. That's correct. Yeah. Okay. As the official affiliations are forming with MLS, I think some obstacles were coming up where the Eagles may not be in the best position to go that route.
And MLS is the big leagues, mm-hmm, in soccer. And somebody wrote that because LA now has an MLS team, that it's becoming the fifth important league in the country with the NFL, the NBA, the National Hockey League, and I'm leaving something out here. What did I leave out?
I don't know.
Baseball, Major League Baseball.
For the attendance and viewing, it might be so far up as second.
And you think that within 5 years, your club, which starts in 2015, will be in the MLS.
That's the goal.
So we would be the third or fourth. We'll be the third major league sport in Charlotte.
So we have the Panthers, the Hornets, the Hounds, and hopefully MLS one day.
One of the things that you and the team are concentrating on right now is building a brand. How do you do that?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of grassroots stuff. As you can imagine, marketing dollars for a small organization like ours is fairly limited, but we're using a lot of social media and getting out there and really tapping into history of Charlotte with the name of the team, the Independents.
Why are you confident that within 5 years you can be in the MLS? What is it about Charlotte, your team, which doesn't exist yet, et cetera, that makes you confident you can be there in 5 years?
Well, Charlotte's obviously a major pro market. MLS wants a couple of things. They want a downtown stadium. We've got that. They want public transportation.
And that downtown stadium is?
Historic Memorial Stadium.
Okay.
public transportation, and they want a fan base. I think the fact that we don't have Major League Baseball in Charlotte, probably never will factor into us being potentially awarded a team. First things first, we got to get the independents on the field and really start to build a fan base.
And I'm told that you're kicking in $2 million, you and the lacrosse team, which you are also part of,
right,
to improve Memorial Stadium, which has been under renovation for quite some time because I think one of the stands collapsed a couple of years ago. But is the field wide enough for soccer? Are you going to have to change that?
The field is not currently wide enough for soccer. Lacrosse fits. We've got a 60-yard wide field for lacrosse, but you know, I think FIFA certified surfaces you want to see between 70 and 75 with some run up for corners. So the historic rock walls that are in place are not retaining walls per se. They're decorative. They've been up since the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Something has to be done because there is some erosion taking place. So we've been working diligently with the county to go in, pull the rock walls down, mm-hmm, push back, get the field width right, put some proper drainage and retaining walls, put the decorative rocks back. The reason we're wanting to kick in some money, that's a little bit unheard of with pro sports teams bringing money to the table.
No kidding.
It's really in our benefit to get in that stadium and start playing with our 3-, 5-, and 7-year plan.
You've sold 600 season tickets. I believe that attendance in the range of 4,000 to 5,000 fans per game is what you're calculating will make
right.
the team financially viable. At ticket prices of $10 to $70 per game, how long do you think it'll take you to reach that level?
I think we can knock it out in year one, if not year two. Year one will be a little bit tricky because it doesn't look like, you know, the county is a bit slow-moving process that you go through. But getting the stadium ready for 2015, probably not. We might be a bit of a road show, but 2016 is where I think it
so
really
So you'll start like the Panthers and move around for the first year.
Yeah.
Wade Liebhart, Chief Revenue Officer of the Charlotte Independents, which takes the field in 2015, in March of 2015. That's the plan. Shane Stay, author of Why American Soccer Isn't There Yet, but it will be. That's the subtitle I just gave it to. Matthew Spear, head men's soccer coach at Davidson College, and Thomas Finley, executive director of the Carolina Rapids Soccer Club. Thank you all for the hour.